part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Severance Reed Architects, Designers, and Planners, dedicated to distinctive projects for higher education, lifestyle, and cultural clients, on the web at www.ratioarchitects.com.
It's 6 minutes past 1 o'clock. This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Today, in this portion of the program, we bring you the Capitol Steps. It's their Politics Takes a Holiday Halloween special.
My fellow Americans, it is President George W. Bush, but on to more serious matters. I feel I need to remind you that on November 2nd, you will be asked to make an important decision, because these are uncertain times, and uncertain times call for uncertain leadership. And of course, as we all know, it's not a good idea to change horses on the way to the apocalypse. I would also like to brief you about Iraq. Now, many people do not realize that we've had successes in Iraq, despite the blemish from the prison abuse scandal at at that prison. But I think the whole thing is blown out of proportion, because the United States would never do something like that again. And we can prove it with official U.S. Army statistics. I assure you, this country firmly believes in the Godiva Convention. Now, as if you needed more reasons to vote for me, I would like to bring out my most trusted advisor, my Vice President, Mr. Dick Cheney. Now, some people believe that Dick needs to be hooked up to a defibrillator, but he always tells the truth. Hey there, Dick. What's that you're holding?
It's a helpless little baby, Mr. President. I've written a lullaby. Rock-a-bye, baby, in the treetop. If the wind blows, the cradle will rock. If the bough breaks with baby and all. If Kerry's elected, baby would fall. I'm serious. Vote for Bush or the baby gets it.
That's right, America. You can either vote for John Kerry, the challenger, or me, the challenged.
From the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center in Washington, D.C., it's the Capitol Steps Halloween edition of Politics Takes a Holiday! Coming soon to Fox TV, it's a new sitcom starring a young boy named John Kerry.
They call him Flipper, Flipper, little John Kerry. No one you see can change quite like he.
Good morning, little John Kerry. It's your birthday, so you can have anything you'd like for breakfast. Do you like waffles?
Oh, Mommy, you know John Kerry loves waffles. And I'm 6 years old today.
Well, which is it, little John Kerry? Just yesterday you said you were 5. Now today you say you're 6. You can't keep changing your mind, or Santa won't bring you any presents.
Oh, Mommy, I don't believe in Santa Claus. I think he was invented just to keep children fearful and obedient.
Well, you can't change your mind about Santa Claus, too. Go to your room.
Boo-hoo, boo-hoo.
Oh, why can't you be more like that little Georgie Bush down the street? No matter what people tell him, he'll always believe in Santa Claus.
And we know Flipper lives in a world full of blunders. Will he win, we wonder, the presidency?
Coming soon to Fox affiliates, check local listings. And now this word from our sponsor. Have you lost your appetite for politics? Not interested in big elections? Do you feel ambivalent every 4 years? You may be suffering from gonorrhea lectum. Now from the leading maker of voter enhancement drugs, try new Votagra. You'll be back in the booth in no time. And your Chad won't be dangling. People who took Votagra while watching campaign commercials had side effects similar to placebo, nausea, drowsiness, and ennui. Call your doctor if you experience elections lasting longer than 72 hours. Offer not good in Florida.
Good evening and welcome to the John Kerry for President Rally.
Woo! Now, hold on, hold on. We reserved this this room for the re-elect Bush gathering. Give it up for Bush!
Some conservative claptrap about how we should stay the course with a guy who invaded the wrong country because the national security briefings didn't come in comic book form.
Well, I'm afraid you and your peacenik friends will have to hold your pro-Saddam rally somewhere else, because we're going to be singing songs for people who don't hate freedom.
Well, excuse me if I'm a little bit Kerry.
And I'm a little bit Cheney Bush.
I'm a little bit of Eastern liberal.
But conservatives lead the W push.
Oh, go play with your guns.
Go burn a flag, you wuss. I'll be voting for W.
But Kerry will kick his tush.
Now let's just talk a little bit about the economy, why don't we? Now, you know those Democrats are just going to tax and spend and spend and tax. When it comes to my taxes, I like big cuts, and I cannot lie. The Democrats can't deny. When Bush walks in with a plan you can't embrace and waves cash in your face, you get sprung. Wanna buy more stuff? Cash never can get enough. The Dow Jones now is flying. More bling bling I am buying. Oh, baby, do I have to draw a picture? I wanna be much richer. Democrats, they may scorn me, but that cut they hate makes me so horny. W cuts tax.
Yeah.
Well, you rich Republicans may like your tax cuts, but we Democrats believe in the new American family. And to prove it, direct from Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, please welcome Kyan and Carson.
Well, we all like Vermont. It's a great state if we want to make a civil union, 'cause we're gay. Hey, hey.
And it seems we've lost a friend, though his campaign had to end. We're hoping he will run again someday.
Cheer up, Howard Dean.
See how much it means to a gay Dean Believer.
And the homecoming queen.
Carrie shares our view, since he comes from Massachusetts, where we can get married on the spot.
And it seems he has no plan for a constitution ban.
And besides, we think his running mate is hot. Who needs Trumpy Dean? Carrie's tall and lean.
So we'll be right behind him if you know what we mean. Yeah.
I'm a little confused. Which one of those guys is the governor of New Jersey? But you know, as a Republican, I firmly believe that only a man and a woman should have the right to be legally divorced. I mean, politics is about the only thing my fourth wife and I have in common. Isn't that right, Sugar Bee?
That's right, honey.
We'll put Republicans in office and we'll get big tax refunds.
That's right, hon. Ooh, that's right, hon.
Education's draining money. We need to buy kids guns.
That's right, hon. Ooh, that's right, hon.
Things we love more than school prayer.
Giving criminals the chair.
And we've never gotten high.
And we love our freedom fries.
Praise right wing.
Go, 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 go,
go. Go, praise right wing, the backbone of the GOP.
Praise right wing, go, praise right wing.
Forest fires could be stopped if we'd cut down all the trees.
Praise right wing, go, praise right wing.
Come and join the right wing now.
We'll be eating spotted owl.
Praise right wing. I guess I better be going. I'm late for my lecture on the evils of the theory of evolution.
Well, I know what you mean. I gotta go too. Barbara Streisand's doing a fundraiser for the lesbian whales who live in the rainforest.
You're a little bit scary, but the prettiest gal I've seen.
If we were to get romantic, I would scream like Howard Dean. Ow!
And we could do some things the courts have ruled obscene. You're my little Coulter.
And you're my Martin Sheen.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Jim Lehrer. As you know, I moderated the first presidential debate, but perhaps because they all felt constrained by the format of these debates, the presidential candidates have all been appearing on Dr. Phil, The Tonight Show, and David Letterman. Of course, this worked well for Bill Clinton back in 1992 when he appeared on the Arsenio Hall show. It seemed at the time a brilliant political move, although in hindsight, I think we all realize he probably looked at it as a way to meet chicks. But lately, the candidates have come to realize that appearing on a Capital Steps radio show might be a way to court the undiscriminating radio listener. So I'm here tonight to moderate a joke-telling contest between the two candidates. So now let's bring them out, President George W. Bush and Senator John Kerry. Welcome, gentlemen. In order to keep things fair, we've allotted each candidate 90 seconds to tell the same joke. Why did the chicken cross the road? Let's lay out a few ground rules. The candidates may not speak to the moderator. Candidates may not speak directly to each other, lunge at each other, or touch each other in any way, shape, or fashion, not even their clothing. The candidates may only gaze at each other meaningfully or else avert their eyes. The candidates may not become intimate with each other.
Now, wait a minute.
Mr. President, that's not what rebuttal means. Candidates will refrain from pointing fingers at each other or throwing things, no spitballs, no animal noises. The candidates will remain clothed for the entire joke.
Jim.
Now, I said no talking to the moderator. The candidates will not resort to name-calling like Jughead, Dimwit, or Fatty Fatty 2x4. The candidates will keep their arms and legs inside the podium at all times. The candidates must be this tall to participate, and for the radio audience, when I say this tall, I'm holding my hand about this far off the ground. So now, based on a coin toss, we'll start with Senator Kerry. Senator Kerry, why did the chicken cross the road?
Well, first, let me say how excited I am to be here this evening. My face is absolutely drooping with excitement. And now let me get to your question, because I've had one position on this chicken the entire time. Did the chicken cross the road? Yes. Did it get to the other side? No. Do we know why he crossed the road? Yes. Do we know why he did not make it to the other side? No. So I can't be much clearer than that.
All right, now, Mr. President, your turn.
Well, I heard it, and you heard it. My opponent just said, wrong chicken, wrong time, wrong road. Now, if you're telling a joke about a chicken, you can't say that. You can't talk like that. I don't know what kind of message that sends to the chicken. I say you got to be tough with these chickens. You got to bomb them. Otherwise, next thing you know, one of the chickens is strapping an egg on its back, lighting a fuse, and the yolk's on you.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Jim Lehrer, and the winner of tonight's debate, anyone with a remote control.
And now for the cultured portion of the Capital Steps radio show, the renowned tenor Luciano Havabiscotti will present an aria about this year's presidential elections.
When I saw Kerry with his head so scary, I mean it's enormous and very hairy, I said, I love you, just because you're not W. But I confess, one guy could mess things up. Go home, Ralph Nader. You bring us down. Your suits, they're wrinkled. Your shoes, they're brown. And then John Kerry won't work so hard. He'll put our debt on his wife's gold card. I have suspicions. Kerry's views, they are tilting. He takes more positions than Paris Hilton. A drab beige color, he's Al Gore, just a dollar. But though he's a tree, well, at least he's no Bush. So get lost, Ralph Nader. You need a new suit, so go back to Sears. And though Ralph Nader's a liberal man who's glad he's running
Look who Kerry picked as his running mate. Isn't that John Edwards guy great?
Nicer than them all, such a southern drawl. Though it isn't fair, he has better hair.
I am pretty, oh so pretty. In each city I'm drawing your glance. And I'm skinny, that's from chasing every ambulance.
La 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 la. He's so peppy, Johnny Deppy,
At campaigning, I simply won't stop.
It's a pity that the ticket can't have him on top.
La 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 la. I'm hoping he can bring in the women's vote.
No one can resist my huge smile.
When he's on TV, women will agree, and it'd sure be nice having him for vice.
We debated, Cheney stated, I'm just one heartbeat from you know where.
And one heartbeat is one more than Dick Cheney can spare.
Good evening, everybody. We are the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. And contrary to what you may have heard, we do believe John Kerry was wounded in Vietnam. We just don't believe he was wounded enough. Now, we've had so much success with our ads attacking John Kerry that we've decided to further our efforts and expose more frauds from United States history.
For example, we firmly believe that Abraham Lincoln's wounds at Ford's Theater were exaggerated. Clearly, we weren't there personally, but we have it on good authority that he actually stayed alert and enjoyed the play for several minutes.
We also have doubts that General Custer was even at the Battle of Little Bighorn. We believe that he tried to earn a Purple Heart by scalping himself and by self-inflicting 147 arrow wounds.
Now, I was the attending physician back when John Kerry was wounded, and, you know, a lot of people say to me, well, how is it after all this time you can remember one specific wound like that, especially when you weren't even the doctor who signed the form? Well, let me tell you something. When you see a wound that superficial, that insignificant, it sticks with you.
Now, hold on, hold on. I'm John Kerry, and despite what these gentlemen are saying, I can assure you, it's much more difficult to receive a combat medal than it is to find National Guard pay stubs. You can run an ad that says that I am bad. You can call me liberal in the press.
We'll call you anti-war.
Say you love Michael Moore.
But let me put this one issue to rest. Don't say my hearts are fakey purple hearts. It hurts so bad it makes me wanna hurl. Because I got my hearts, my fakey purple hearts, by making Rambo look just like a girl.
You say that you were getting shot while Bush was doing shots of whiskey in that sleazy frat house bar.
While in the way of harm, some shrapnel hit your arm. It was so bad it almost left a scar.
Hey, don't diss my hearts, my fakey purple hearts, or say that I'm a liberal Democrat.
'Cause even if you're not, your reputation's shot.
Hey, can I get a purple heart for that?
You must be Ohio. I'm Texas. I'm pretty conservative, but I hear you swing.
I sure do swing. And I've got a little song for states like you. This fall, you watch the candidates a lot. You think your vote will count, but maybe not. It don't mean a thing if your state's not a swing. Does not. This year, politics is all who Cleveland picks. It's true,
is not,
is too,
is not,
is too,
is not,
is too,
is not.
There's 16 states that they'll campaign in well. Those other states can all just go to.
Hey, I'm right here. But it's not so bad. We don't have to hear those ads.
You mean you don't have to listen to...
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
That's right, and we also don't have to listen to...
I'm John Kerry, and I gave positive affirmation to the aforementioned content of a messengerial nature as required under FEC Regulation 655.
Hello, I'm a minister with the new Iraqi government. When I was first appointed, they sent me down to have my physical. The doctor examined me, and after a series of examination and tests, he informed me that I had 6 months to live. And I said, woohoo! I mean, 6 months, that's more than anyone else in the new Iraqi government will get, huh? So I got that going for me. But I'm having a little bit of difficulty in my new job as Iraq's Minister of Tourism. We're trying to develop new ways to lure American tourists to our land so they will spend their hard-earned dollars. In fact, we are even going to give up our long-term tourism slogan, Death to the Great Satan! In favor of something, oh, a little more family-friendly, like, I don't know, come to Iraq and declare a jihad on boredom. Well, maybe it will sound better in a song. Won't you come and tour Iraq? See the land that's so Islami. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of Tikrit. If you hear a loud attack, we'll just say the weather's balmy. But maybe we should meet on the Sunni side of the street. Let's all go walking at noon, though the streets all are strewn like a Flintstones cartoon. We've trouble with rubble, and maybe we'll have luck, and things won't be so Saddam-y. Our state bird is the duck on the sunny side. Better run inside, get your gun and hide in Tikrit.
Bye-bye. This show was produced by the Capitol Steps and hurled kicking and screaming in front of a live audience at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center in Washington, D.C. It was written by Mark Eaton and Elena Newport. And now we'd like to introduce our performers first as George W. Bush, a man who's as smart as both Olsen twins put together, Kevin Carbon. In the role of John Kerry, the most talented member of the group, and he ought to know because he wrote these credits, Mark Eaton. Playing Dick Cheney, a man who lost 200 unwanted pounds when he fired his personal trainer, Mike Tilford. As our swinging states, two women who don't need Botox but use it recreationally, Ann Willis Hill and Elena Newport. And me, I'm Richard Paul, now gluten-free. On the piano, the only Emmy Award-winning member of the Capitol Steps, and you can't buy those things because, believe me, he's tried, Lenny Williams. We'd like to thank our sound engineer, Jim Smith, road crew, Rich Patterson, Bob O'Hara, and Paul Tompros, and permanent press secretary, Bill Hurd. The Capitol Steps' new album is called Papa's Got a Brand New Baghdad. If you'd like to order this or other Capitol Steps cassettes and CDs, or to find out when the Capitol Steps are coming to your area, visit our website at capsteps.com. That's capsteps.com. Or for the cyberphobic, you can call 1-800-733-STEP. Thanks for listening!
And we will also broadcast this program this Friday evening, tomorrow evening at 6:30. It's 1:35. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Every year around this time, Jason Croft likes to find out what's happening in the world of ghost hunting. Troy Taylor is the author of Haunted Illinois and one of the founders of the American Ghost Society. He lives in Alton, Illinois. Jason last talked with Taylor in 2002. When they talked earlier this month, Jason asked Taylor, what's new in the world of ghost hunting?
Well, you know, as far as things that are new in the world of ghost hunting, I'd have to say that Not a lot is new. a lot of it is old, which is good, because I think that as far as, you know, ghost hunting goes, that search for evidence, I think that people are realizing that some of the, you know, tried and true methods and techniques and ideas are really becoming worthwhile again. On the other hand, I do find that a lot of those tried and true techniques have been updated so that we're using today's technology, I suppose you would say, in ways that they were, you know, ghost hunters of old were using the same types of things. When a ghost hunter in the old days would use some string and a jar of flour to see if anybody passed through, today's ghost hunter uses, infrared motion detectors and that sort of thing. Photography has come a long way in the last couple of years. People are still using the tried and true 35mm, which is really still the best method to use when trying to capture evidence of ghosts. But people are also discovering that some of the old digital cameras, some of the early ones that were becoming so popular with ghost hunters because you could take all the pictures you wanted, wouldn't have to use any film, and there's no cost, and et cetera, are realizing finally, as I've been trying to tell people for years, really aren't that good because they really just don't capture true images. They're too easily manipulated. They don't work well in low light. And people are finally realizing that now you can actually get good digital cameras, 8-megapixel and better cameras, that really do capture true images, that actually do produce what really would be a digital negative embedded in their code so that they can see if the photographs have been manipulated and that sort of thing. So as far as ghost hunting goes, there are some new things, new versions of old things for the most part. But for me, in ghost hunting, a lot of my ghost hunting doesn't necessarily mean going out trying to, always track down evidence. I love to do it. But a lot of my ghost hunting becomes trying to track down new stories. And believe it or not, you would think that I would have Illinois kind of tapped out by now with as many things as I've done about Illinois, but actually I'm finding new places all the time.
Like
and,
what?
Well, some of the new places. I recently, or by the time this is probably aired, the new edition of Haunted Illinois will be out. This was actually the third edition of the book, which is how many new things I've been finding. And this is a more traveler-friendly version of the book, offering directions and ideas about how to get to some of the places. But I've run across a number of new spots, which, of course, really aren't new, but they're new for me, new for the readers. The Oakaville Original Springs down in Oakaville, Illinois, apparently had been haunted for years, but had never really come to anyone's attention, really. The owners were well aware that the place was haunted. It's an interesting place. Oakaville is just this tiny little town off Interstate 64, which, of course, was there long before Interstate 64 was. But they have what is Illinois' only still operating mineral springs, where people can actually come, take in the waters, drink the waters. Has a lot of, it's believed, curative powers, a lot of, if nothing else, invigorating powers to the water. But the hotel that has been built there, it's been there since the middle 1800s, is very haunted. They have a lot of different kinds of activity, a lot of ghost sightings, footsteps, doors that open and close, lights that turn on and off, you know, your typical ghostly kinds of things, but it's a great location. That's one of the many places that I've run across pretty recently.
Well, what are the current trends? What are people reporting? What are ghost hunters looking out for?
Well, as far as speaking for myself personally, I'm always on the lookout for an active location that has a great history behind it. And that's one of the things that I find that ghost hunters are starting to really search for, to look for. They're beginning to realize that just because a place may be haunted and may have some activity, if you can't find out why that activity is there, it makes it almost impossible to do any kind of research there. So people are starting to realize the importance of the history at these locations. And that's one of the things that I find more and more people now starting to look for. It's been something that it's been important to me always, just because I've always been a history buff, and that's really something that I specialize in. But I'm finding that it's starting to finally catch on, and people are being intrigued by it. So that's something that I know a lot of other people are looking for. It's something I'm always on the lookout for. A great story is always something I'm on the lookout for, though. So I guess that can't really, I can't say that that's a new trend, but it is something that I think is people are finding to be very important.
Well, you mentioned the springs earlier. Are there any other interesting places that you've been investigating?
Yeah, actually, last year I ran across a location that I've started to do some more work with, a place called the Coliseum Ballroom in Bunnell, Illinois. Again, one of those places that's been around forever, and it's one of those places that people have talked about being haunted, but it really hasn't come to the attention of too many researchers, and it's never appeared in any of the books, in any books before, actually. In fact, the New Illinois book will be the first book that it's ever appeared in print. The Coliseum was started back in the 1920s, right on what was then Route 66. Route 66, a few years later, would kind of veer over in 1930 and bypass Bunnell a little bit, but it was a really hot place when it opened. What was interesting about it is that Bunnell is a tiny little mining town, but it had a reputation for the number of bars and brothels and that sort of thing that were located in town. It was said on the very short little main street there were over 100 of these places. But the Coliseum opened up. It cost about $50,000 in 1928 in this little bitty town. A lot of people kind of questioned, you know, where the money came from, what was involved, what was going on. Well, it turns out that the owner of the place was later arrested for bootlegging and for being involved in illegal liquor sales in the area. And before he was about to testify, he disappeared. And they found him a few days later shot in the back of the head and floating in the Sangamon River. So the mob ties that were suspected about the place were probably true. But the place was run by his daughter for a number of years and became a really, really popular hotspot. From the big band era, they had all the big band performers, from the Glenn Miller Band to just about everybody else through the 1930s and 40s played at the Coliseum. Later on, it turned into more of a rock and roll venue, and again, all the greats, Chuck Berry, Chubby Checker, Bill Haley and the Comets, and then on, Bob Seger, Fleetwood Mac, all kinds of people played up into the late 70s at the Coliseum. And eventually then it sort of faded out of existence and closed down, and it's now open as an antique mall. But again, it's one of those places where events from the past and the history of the past has really left an impression on this place, because people now have had all sorts of experiences with seeing ghosts in, you know, in evening clothes and hearing music play and just a variety of different things. It's turned out to be a very haunted place.
So for those of us who, in the Champaign-Urbana and surrounding areas, who during the Halloween season want to go out and sort of encounter our own ghostly experience, if we're lucky, where would you suggest we go?
You know, that's a tough one. Believe it or not, it's tough. Champaign-Urbana has always been kind of a tough place for me to find a lot of material about. There's a few U of I stories, and of course there's, you know, Clement Cemetery. You may be familiar with the story about the Blue Man. They say if you go out there on certain nights to the cemetery, I believe when the moon is full, that you will see this glowing blue man who was hanged there or committed suicide there, depending on the version of the story you hear, a number of years ago. I don't know how this story got started. I haven't been able to find any background behind it, but it is a story that I do often hear about that area. If you don't mind traveling just a little bit, you wouldn't have to go too far, but there are some other places to go. Eastern Illinois University, of course, has its own resident ghost at Pemberton Hall. Mary Hawkins is a ghost who haunts Pemberton Hall. It's a counselor who died or committed suicide a number of years ago after one of her students that she took care of was murdered, and she is said to have haunted the building ever since. This story is interesting because it does have some real actual historical roots. Plus, it also has a background of a lot of women who've lived in the building who've had very strange experiences there. So that's one of those ongoing stories that I've always been pretty impressed with. If you head out to the Arcola area, which is not too terribly far, You will run into a little town called Chesterville. There isn't much to see in Chesterville. It's just a handful of houses. But right out on the edge of town, across this rickety one-lane bridge that was obviously built for Amish buggies and not for cars, there is a little cemetery that holds what's been known as a witch's grave. The cemetery is very small. It's off to the side of the road. The grave's not hard to find because it was a grave that was built into a fenced area, and then a tree was planted so that it grew up right over the middle of the grave. Now, the story is that the tree was planted there on purpose to try to keep the soul of the witch from returning as a ghost. It doesn't seem to have helped, though, because there have been a lot of people who claim to have encountered a woman in the cemetery wandering near these graves. So maybe it didn't keep her in the ground, but at least it kept her close by. There's another great location. I got to mention this one because it's, again, not too far away. And it's another sort of witch's grave. But near Ashmore, Illinois, there is a little cemetery called St. Omer's. And it's one of those places where you blink, you'll miss it because you can't see it from the road. It's off into the woods. But it's a nice, neat, well-kept little cemetery. And it also has what's called a witch's grave in it. It's a very interesting grave. It looks like it's stone that's been fashioned into what looks like logs. And on top of the logs is this round ball that is dedicated to the Barnes family. Now, it seems to be just sort of an interesting gravestone until you start to look at it closely and you check the name of a woman named Elizabeth Barnes. Now, Elizabeth, her name appears on just one side of the ball. And it appears to be very ordinary. Her birth date is listed there, and below that is what is supposed to be her death date. Now, the death date on the ball is February the 31st, 1882. Now, since February doesn't have 31 days, people have wondered why in the world this stone happened to be carved that way. Well, local legend has it that this woman was a witch and who had vowed to return on the anniversary of her death. Well, yeah, they felt if they marked the stone with a date that did not exist, she'd never come back. I don't know if that story's true. I talked to a lot of people who claim that the tombstone glows at night, that there have been odd things that have happened in the cemetery, etc. But I don't know for sure, but it's certainly a very odd kind of central Illinois site.
Wow. Well, if people want to learn more about what's going on ghost-wise in Illinois and about what you do, where can they go to?
Well, you can go to the website. That's probably your best bet, which you go to www.historyandhauntings.com. And you can. We've got a huge section right there at the top of our homepage that links you to a section of Weird Illinois, and we've got tons of stuff, lots and lots of stories in different locations and sites. It only scratches the surface. We've got hundreds of sites in some of the books, and you can check that out on your own. But there's lots and lots of free information on the website that will keep you busy all through the Halloween season.
Well, Troy, thanks for checking in with us again.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
That was Troy Taylor, one of the founders of the American Ghost Society and the author of Haunted Illinois. He talked with Jason Croft. We'll be right back. This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn. Settlement prices are in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here with the numbers, Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Celeste. From the Chicago Board of Trade on this Thursday afternoon, December wheat futures settled today like this. They were up 3 with a high of 324, low at 318. Settlement price there at 322 and one quarter. Once again, that December wheat contract finished today 3 cents higher. March futures now, 334 and a half, the high, the low at 328. Settlement price at 333 and a half, up 3 and a half. And the May contract finished the day 3 higher, 339, the high, the low at 334, and a settlement price for the May wheat at 338 and one half. July contract, 342, the high, the low at 335, settled 340 and a half. They were up 3 3/4 in the September futures, 347 and a half, the high, the low at 344 and one half. Settlement price at 347, up 4 1/2 cents. From the corn pit, they finished the day mostly mixed, mostly narrowly mixed for the day, unchanged in the nearby December contract, a high in a narrow trading range of 207 and a quarter, the low at 205 and a quarter, a settlement price right in the middle, 206 and a quarter. Once again, that Dease contract finished the day unchanged. March futures, 218 the high, the low at 216, settled 217 and a quarter, unchanged in the May contract, a quarter of a cent higher, 225 and a half the high, the low at 223 and 3/4. May corn settled 224 and 3/4, up 1/4. July corn, 231 and 3/4, the high, the low at 230 and a quarter, settled 231 and a quarter of a cent higher, and the September contract finished the day unchanged at 237 and a quarter, with a high of 238 and a low at 237 for a 1 cent trading range. December futures for next year, 246 and a quarter, the high, low at 245, and the Dease contract for next year settled at 245 and a quarter. They were down a quarter of a cent for the day. December oats now, 143 and a half, the high, the low at 139 and 3/4, settled 142 and a quarter, up 2 1/2 cents. In the March oat contract, a 149 and a half high, low there at 146 and a half, a settlement price at 149, up 2 1/4. This Saturday, just before Commodity Week, usually starts at 11:30 a.m. WILL will air, instead of Wall Street Week, a candidate's public square, a series of commentaries from all of the public office candidates in Champaign County. That'll start at 11 o'clock a.m. It'll run a little longer than the half-hour program Wall Street Week. So Commodity Week will start late. If you tune in and you're hearing some candidates speaking about Champaign County, stay with us at that time. Commodity Week will show up and air it in its entirety immediately following the candidate's public square, which starts at 11 a.m. this Saturday morning. By the way, don't forget to change your clock Saturday morning or Saturday evening and Sunday morning. You'll be pushing those back an hour if you live in the state of Illinois and a few places in Indiana. Soybeans now from the complex there. November contract, 534 the high, the low at 527, the settlement price at 529 and a half, down a half cent. And the January's 538 the high, the low at 531, settlement price at 535 and a half. They were up 1 3/4 at the end of the day. March soybeans, 544 the high, low at 538, settlement price at 542 and a quarter, 2 1/2 higher. And the May contract finished the day up 1 1/4 with a high of 551, a low at 545 and a half, and a settlement price at 548 and one half. July futures, 558 and a half the high, the low at 552 and a half, settlement price at 556, up 2 1/4. And the August, 558 the high, the low at 555, settlement price 558. They were up 1 in the bean pit. From the bean products now, December bean meal, 156.50, the high, the low at 154.60, settlement price at $155.40. They were up a dime, and the January bean meal finished 20 cents higher, 156.90, the settlement price there, the high at 157.80 and the low at 156.10. December bean oil, $21.52 a pound, the high, the low at 21.20, settled 21.49, they were up 28 cents, and the January bean oil, 21.63, the high, the low at 21.35, settlement price at 21.61, finished the day in the January bean oil, up 23 for the day. Now here's Celeste Quinn with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Thank you, Todd. Cattle were higher today, lower, while hogs and bellies finished higher. October feeder cattle, 114.07 and a half, the high, the low, 113.87 and a half. The settlement, 113.90, that down 17 and a half. November, 111.90, the high, 111.10, the low. The settlement, 111.45, that down 15. January feeder cattle, 109.15, the high, 108.35, the low, 108.42 and a half, the settlement, that down 60. October live cattle 8742.5, the high 8665, the low 8677.5, the settlement that down 57.5. December 8680, the high 8590, the low 8625, the settlement that down 37.5. December lean hog 6660, the high 66 even, the low finishing at 6635, up 50. February lean hog 6612.5, the high 6510, the low, the settlement 6587.5, that up $1. April lean hog 6405, the high 6270, the low 6380, the settlement, excuse me, that's 6385, the settlement for April lean hogs, that up 137.5. May 6440, the high 6385, the low, the settlement 6435, that up 80. February pork bellies 9475, the high 9390, the low, the settlement 9472.5, that up 67.5. And the Dow is up 24 points at 10,026, the Nasdaq 7 higher at 1977, the S&P 500 up 3 at 1129.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For more information, call 866-837-9027 or 877-433-4348.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Christy Cavanelli from Los Angeles, California writes, "Dear Dr. Science, when are the police going to arrest me for performing all these illegal operations?"
You too, huh? Gee, I thought I was the only one who enjoyed cutting people open and moving the stuff inside around. Although I'm not a real doctor, I do relish taking a scalpel to a consenting adult and wearing that white face mask that makes my eyes look all the more menacing. Maybe it's the romance of the scalpel or the lure of the ether and the drama of that big overhead light, but tell you, put me in an operating room and I become somebody else. Even if I haven't got the faintest idea what I'm doing, I fake it till I make it. And I'm sure that's what you're up to as well. I mean, is that so wrong?
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
Produced by Duck's Breath and distributed by PRI, Public Radio International. To order the Dr. Science Get Smart Kit with new CD, screensaver for PCs, and a master's degree mouse pad, $21.95, call 800-989-DUCK.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Swires Land and Management Company, Danville; Michael W. Walker Consulting, Urbana; and Wind, Water, and Light in Mahomet. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank